Welcome to Field Goals, for the focus-driven athlete, hosted by Glenn Hames, where we share tips and strategies that help amateur athletes, coaches, and teams achieve their on- and off-the-field athletic goals. Our show discusses topics important to the elite amateur athlete. Whether you play football, basketball, soccer, or any other active sport, either on the field or court, our experienced industry experts, coaches, and former professional athletes will provide firsthand insight on topics that will give athletes who desire to play sports at the highest level an edge over their competition, and undoubtedly will help turn their athletic goals into a reality. When there's a new season, there are new goals. What's your field goals? The 2021-2022 sports year has officially begun. And this year will be an exciting one after coming off of a tumultuous 2020 athletic year. For student athletes, you know the personal and team benefits for remaining healthy during the season. If you want the opportunity to win games, play for a conference championship, national championship, receive an athletic scholarship, or have the opportunity of playing at the highest level, it's imperative you keep your body healthy and injury-free. When athletes do not prepare their bodies adequately in the offseason, they significantly increase their chances of receiving an injury or multiple injuries in season. According to the Nationwide Children's Hospital, 50% of injuries sustained by young athletes playing organized sports can be avoided if the athletes were suitably conditioned to play their game before the season starts. Believe it or not, the sports that generate the most athletic injuries occur in the fall. Topping the list is basketball, followed by football, soccer, and then baseball. The most common sports injuries include hamstring strains, groin pulls, shin splints, ACL tears, and concussions. So let's put it all in perspective. Here are some startling did you knows related to sports injuries for 2021. There's no surprise here. Men's football causes the largest number of severe injuries. However, soccer causes the highest number of injuries in women's sports. And according to the CDC injury statistics, men get injured more often than women, but female athletes have a higher rate of overuse injuries. College athletes' injury statistics show that 63.8% of injuries happen during competitions and not during practice. Around 21.9% of injuries require over 7 days off of play. Sports injury statistics show that the average cost of player injuries in top soccer leagues amounts to $12.4 million for each team. With an estimated 7 million Americans receiving some sort of treatment for sports-related injuries annually, proper care is key to avoiding the sidelines. And with those type of numbers, you know the old saying that's echoed in every locker room holds true. You can't make the club if you're always in the tub. Hey, everyone. Thanks for coming on to the show today. I am super excited about the guest that we have on with us today on the field. This person is someone that I know personally. Not only is he just a world-renowned coach, but he's also a personal friend. And I've had the chance and the opportunity for quite some time to watch his work and the things that he's done with amateur athletes. He has a passion for sports and a passion for helping amateur athletes achieve their goals. So when starting this podcast, he was the first person that I could think of and wanted to get on the show immediately. So joining me on the field today for our inaugural show to discuss how amateur athletes can prevent and minimize injuries by properly preparing their bodies for the upcoming sports season is NFL veteran and CEO of Perfect Performance, Coach Leonard Stevens. What's up, bro, man? Great to have you on the show.
Man, I'm super excited to be here. Thank you so much. Yes, we go back to when your son was a freshman in high school. And how far, you know, he's come, how far we've come. And it's been great to get to know you and your family. And I definitely consider myself family. And so, you know, beyond honored to be here on the inaugural show. We've been talking about field goals and the Facebook page and now the podcast. So just super proud of you and happy for you for this momentous step in your journey. And so I'm excited to talk and get the conversation going.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. It has been a journey. You know, this is actually my goal. My goal was to start this podcast because of the passion that I've always had for helping amateur athletes achieve their goals, both on and off the field. So, you know, the best is yet to come. We're only going to go higher than where we are starting right now. It's only one place to go, and that is up, man. So before we even get started, man, you know, we've just coming off of a very tumultuous year in 2020. Just wanted to see how you were doing and how the family is doing as well right now as we get ready to start the 2021 fall sports season.
Thank you for asking. My family is excellent, man. You know, I am blessed beyond measure. I have a wonderful wife, Dr. Candace Renee Turpin. I have a daughter. She's my oldest, Kendall Renee Stevens. She's 11, a sixth grader. My son is Leonard Charles Stevens III, and he is a second grader. He's 7 years old. And my kids, of course, are active athletes. My daughter plays travel soccer. She's playing Girls Academy soccer, which is an elite level league that many clubs are subscribing to across the country. And she's playing a year up. So she's a sixth grader playing with seventh graders and then against eighth graders at times. And then my son is playing his first year of travel baseball at 8U and playing soccer this fall. So we are, you know, every day doing some type of practice or some type of training session. And so they're doing well. School year has started off positively. My wife is good. And, you know, we're just, you know, very thankful to God for his blessings upon us and our family. And couldn't be more excited to just see, you know, where the year takes us.
Awesome, man. I know about that. The kids will keep you busy. You know, yes. I'm actually glad that I'm an empty nester myself with Channing already graduating from college. And I got a little one as well, man. And we're starting the process of grooming her in sports, too. So I completely get that, man. So glad to hear that you guys are staying safe through this COVID year that we've come through. And, you know, the good thing is the best is still yet to come. So
that's right. That's
ready
right.
to take the field, bro? You ready
yes,
to take
sir.
The field?
Take, ready to take
All
the
right,
field.
Man.
Ready to take the field.
Yes, sir. Let's go ahead and get it started. You know, you were an athlete that played at every level, including the very highest level, playing in the NFL. What I'm most curious about is share with us a little bit about, was it always your goal to play in the NFL?
No, it was a dream, but not a goal. And so I think dreams are visions that you have of yourself doing elite and great things and super wonderful things versus a goal is something that you, you know, actively seek to attain or achieve. And so I did not have playing in the NFL as a goal, but always, you know, as a young boy, was like, wow, you know, how crazy. And I started playing football later than some of my other contemporaries in high school. I didn't start playing till eighth grade, where some of the other kids that I played with were playing in fifth grade, sixth grade. And so, you know, watching football, always loving football. My dad played college football, so I would always watch with him going to games. You know, he played at Howard University just like I did. And so I did a lot of things that he did. And so, you know, going to Howard University games, going to the Grambling Southern game, going to, you know, back when I was growing up, Grambling and whoever, it could have been Hampton, it could have been Howard, it could have been Morgan State played in what was the Urban League Classic in New York. We would go to that game every year. So was always around football, always around, you know, Black college football and watching NFL. And so even as a young kid, envisioning myself playing in college, you know, was like, whoa, wow. You know, and then envisioning myself playing in the NFL was like, whoa, wow. You know, but never did I think that it would actually happen.
Yeah. Yeah. How was that NFL journey for you? Once you actually got started playing NFL, you get drafted. Talk to us a little bit about what that journey was like.
It was incredible. It was an experience that has allowed me to achieve the things post-career that I have achieved and allow me to do the things. It brought you and I together. Had I not played in the National Football League, I would not be in a position to talk to you and your son about playing at the next level. And so it was an incredible experience. It did not necessarily happen the way that I had wanted it to happen, right? You want to have a 10, 15, you know, year career. You want to make a bunch of money. You want to be a starter. You want to be a Pro Bowler. You want to be a Hall of Famer. That was not my career. But even in the ebbs and flows and the tumultuous nature of the game itself, football period, whether you're playing, you know, youth, high school, college or pro, I definitely, you know, enjoyed every bit of it. You know, the camaraderie, the people, the cities, the games, you know, I remember everything. And I soaked it up then in terms of, you know, putting my best foot forward every day and trying to get 1% better from one day to the next, as well as, you know, savored every moment of friendship, camaraderie, experience, you know, memories, all of it. So all in all, it was a great career, a great set of memories that I have from playing.
Awesome. Today's topic is that how do we train for perfect performance? And since we're discussing how to properly train your body for perfect performance, how did you go about preparing your body each season to sustain itself to perform at the highest level when you were at the NFL?
You know, that's so funny that you asked that, because you think that, you know, when you get to the level of college, it's going to be better than high school. Then you get to the level of the NFL, it's going to be better than college. And the truth of the matter is, it is more structured, but it doesn't mean it's better. And so the preparation that was subscribed or prescribed for us with my first team, which was the San Diego Chargers, I thought was excellent. The strength coach there had a philosophy of, you know, true multi-joint movements, true plyometric, true speed endurance, you know, and I can define and talk about all of those. And so he wanted to continue to produce athleticism and continue to produce explosiveness in athletes, even at the NFL level, versus the next team I went to, which was the Washington Redskins, or the former Washington Redskins, now the Washington football team. They had a, we don't want to do any harm mentality, meaning, you know, in San Diego, we use barbells, we use dumbbells. In Washington, it was machines. There was a more of a high intensity, you know, single joint movement philosophy. And I found myself getting weaker through the season because of not only the type of workouts and the type of strength training that was programmed, but also the lack of intensity and also the lack of frequency. Because what you also have to take into consideration, me being a 22, 23, 24 year old, you know, first, second year, third year player versus Bruce Smith, who's at that point 19, 20 years in, you know, what I'm able to do and or still able to do. And I'm, you know, also thinking about trying to keep my edge versus Bruce is on the downside of his career. And he's just trying to make sure he can get through the week to the next game. So two completely different people, two completely different athletes at different stages of their career. And it was almost like a one size fits all type of, you know, training program that I found did not suit me. And I didn't, you know, realize that until after that season in 2002, when I was here with the Skins. At the end of the season, I was like, man, I don't like the way I feel. You know, I didn't feel explosive. I didn't feel as, you know, quick and powerful as I felt at the beginning of the season. And for me, the type of player that I was, I wanted to feel the same way that I felt at the beginning of the season. I wanted to feel in the middle of the season and the end of the season from the standpoint of being explosive and able to do the things that I needed to do in a certain manner. So I had to make a change after that first year. When you know better, you do better, right? And so ultimately that led me to continuing to pursue being better and understanding that there is levels to this, right? There's levels to everything. You know, there's a difference between having a personal accountant that is specific to you and your finances versus going to Jackson Hewitt or H&R Block to get your taxes done, right? Two completely, totally different, you know, perspectives. And so my last season in the league, or the last few seasons in the league, I trained with a personal trainer in Arizona, much more expensive, but the investment, you know, you can look at things as an expense, or you can look at things as an investment. And I looked at it as an investment, and it's the best investment that I made during my career, because it got me to the point where I was, you know, physically dominant and maximized all of the attributes that I had. And so that set my perspective and my paradigm for what I do now with the amateur athletes, because, you know, I truly believe that the amateur athlete can handle in a regressed offering what a professional athlete can handle. And if you get what a professional athlete is getting in the morsels that an amateur athlete needs, he or she can flourish and maximize their opportunity as opposed to waiting. I can't tell you, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, how many athletes tell me once they got to college, particularly for the non-generating sports, oh man, I wish I would have lifted. I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have, you know, stretched or had a better nutritional regimen, whatever.
Right.
And it's sometimes they don't know, you know, sometimes they don't listen. Yep. So I prepared my body.
So now you have left the NFL, and in 2006, you founded Perfect Performance. I know you were talking about some of the things that you went through as a professional and how that motivated you to start what you're doing now. So share with us where that idea came from and what was your motivation to start working with amateur athletes?
Just so I was training, I had a sports hernia one season. I was on injured reserve with the Lions in 2005 season, and I was home rehabbing here in D.C., and was at a spot called Velocity Sports Performance in Alexandria.
Yep, very familiar.
I saw a guy doing some one-on-one basketball training with an athlete. There was a coach. The guy he played overseas. And I was like,
play football or basketball?
Play basketball. It was okay. A basketball training session at Velocity. And I had just finished working out. Some of my college teammates and I, who were all professionals at the time, we had just finished working out. And I'm like, man, what are they doing? And somebody told me, and I was like, there's got to be something like this for football. And we, you know, searched on the internet, and there was nothing. And so at that point, the idea was born among myself, a college teammate of mine, and a former NFL teammate of mine. And, you know, we launched Perfect Performance in January of 2006.
Awesome, man. I mean, I love the name. I remember the first time I actually heard about you guys and saw you on the internet, I was blown away. You know, you mentioned you were training my son back when he was a freshman in high school. And when I found you guys and looked at it, you know, the website was very interactive. And I was like, wow. I mean, the name itself just captivated me about Perfect Performance. And I can tell just then that you guys were serious about business and your craft. You and your coaching staff have trained at least over 500 athletes of all sports. Not mm-hmm. just a football. I just want to be clear that this is not a football program. I know that you guys train all athletes for all different sports, helping them reach their goals of playing collegiate sports. Mm-hmm. And in addition, I also realize that you guys have trained hundreds of college athletes during the offseason, and you've even prepared some to even to play professionally. So obviously, you've seen amateur athletes pick up poor training habits and develop ineffective techniques. For the sake of this show, since we are talking about how to train your body to minimize injury and maximize performance, give us some insight on the difference between effective and ineffective training techniques that players develop. And then I want you to talk about a little bit about how you break these athletes out of poor training habits.
So everything's in the details, right? Devil's in the details. So the first thing that, you know, we see is a lack of attention to detail. And when we speak about that, all field athletes, court athletes as well, but definitely field athletes, you know, football, softball, soccer, baseball, lacrosse, field hockey, are always on your feet, right? And how you move and how your feet engage the ground are extremely important, because if there's a chink in the armor with how your feet engage the ground, it's going to create a negative ripple effect all the way up the kinetic chain.
What does that mean when you say a chink in the armor?
So let's just say that you can't stabilize and put pressure and activate your feet as it relates to the ground. So like I talk to my athletes about being able to stabilize. Balance starts from the ground. So in most sports, at some point, you're going to be on one foot, right? Mm-hmm. Think about playing lacrosse, playing soccer, playing football. You know, you're a receiver and you're doing a release. There is a time when only one foot is going to be on the ground, and it may be a very small amount of time. And so if there's something wrong in that engagement of foot and ground, that's a chink in the armor where it prevents you from stabilizing and has a potential to cause injury, whether that's how your foot pronates, that's lack of ankle mobility. And so both of those are key to making sure that your kinetic chain from the ground up, from the foot up, is mm-hmm. is solid. So that's what I mean.
Gotcha. Okay. So when an amateur athlete comes to you guys to get some levels of training, I mean, obviously you got an athlete that's going to do the things that their coach is telling them to do, but you guys are the experts. And that's not diminishing the knowledge of a high school athlete or even a college athlete. But, you know, kids tend to pick up sometimes poor habits. You know, one of the examples that comes to my mind is actually Tim Tebow. When he was at Florida, you know, he was an effective quarterback for that time. But when he went to the NFL, his throwing technique didn't work then. So when you talk about the difference between proper and improper training techniques, again, what does that look like? And how can you guys go about breaking athletes out of poor training habits that could potentially get them hurt on the field?
And that's it. It's the communication of the details, right? And it's everybody mm-hmm. learns. It is the communication cycle, for lack of a better term. So if I just say to you, Glenn, you know, you need to lift harder, you need to lift faster, go, 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 or, you know, get lower, and I don't articulate what I actually mean and define get lower. I need you to widen your feet. I need you to sink your butt as low as it can possibly be. I need you to have your quads go below parallel. I need you to engage your core. I need whatever it is, those coaching cues, first of all, teaching the player, communicating the coaching cues, and then ensuring that the player has received the coaching cues, because everybody learns visually. Some people learn audibly. Some people learn kinesthetically. Making sure that whatever the learning style is of that individual athlete or group of athletes is met, and then reinforcing and asking them to communicate to you what you just taught them. So that is my style. You know, hey, what are the 3 points to squatting? What are the 3 points to deadlifting? What are the 3 coaching cues for speed, you know, for upper body mechanics, lower body mechanics, whatever it is. And so when you communicate things to people and then you ask them to say it back to you, that is actual them learning and digesting, because they've had to hear it, then they've had to say it, and then they got to do it. So those 3 touch points allow them to learn. And that's how you create good habits and good movement patterns. And we know that it takes 10,000 hours for a habit to become a skill. And that's what we want, you know, our players and our athletes to have. We want them to have a set of skills in all realms of athleticism and sport. So clearly for, you know, and I articulate where and how what we do in the weight room or what we do on the training turf correlates to their position, their sport on their particular field and or court. And so the more you can do that, then, you know, that helps.
So when you talk about getting low and squatting and things like that, again, I just want to be clear that that's for whether if I play football or lacrosse, or if I play soccer or basketball, volleyball, or anything mm-hmm. like that. Because I know you guys train various different types of athletes in various different types of sports. So, but all those techniques that you just described will be applicable to the sport that
yes.
the student comes to you to play with.
Yes, because one of the phrases that we use is you need stability in all ranges of mobility, right? Because you never know when your foot is going to get caught up underneath you in a manner that is unplanned, right? You know, the game right. is going to take you to different body positions. And so if you train with full range of mobility, then you're going to be prepared and your body's not going to be in shock. Everything that we do is about preparing for the unknown. And so if we can prepare for the unknown and put our bodies in that mentality, mindset, and paradigm, then, you know, when we get on the field, the body is not shocked. It's had a high load at a low level, right? Meaning I've had 300, 200 pounds on my back in a low squat. Just like if I'm a running back, I've had a linebacker on my back who weighs 215, 220, 230, and I'm trying to jump cut in and out of a gap to a B gap, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the same type of concept. And so that's how, you know, you prepare the body such that it is prepared and there's not laziness or weaknesses. You know, the body doesn't demonstrate bad habits.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion is a vital part of an organization's ecosystem. It is to an organization like air is to humans. If either one is absent, the outcome will not be positive. Research shows that companies that value DEI are stronger and more profitable than those that don't. LMH Strategies understands that diversity, equity, and inclusion is more than just a business solution, but a core set of principles that make up your organization's culture. LMH Strategies is a leadership, management, and human systems consulting company that specializes in business transformation, program management, and federal and civilian partnerships. They understand that implementing DEI in the workplace is being proactive and not a reactive strategy. With over 25 years of experience working with partners in higher education, government, and business, LMH Strategies has a focus on change management, supplier diversity, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. Their professional team brings a wide range of national and global experiences in different industries that will help align your organization to meet and achieve its desired outcomes. They look at the whole company, aligning attention with perception to deliver measurable solutions. And that makes for an improved workforce, better businesses, and a brighter world. Industry, government, and higher education markets trust LMH Strategies as their business partner, and they welcome the opportunity to earn your trust too. I read earlier that some of the most common sports injuries are hamstring tears, groin pulls, shin splints, ACL tears, and concussions. So do you find that these are the most common injuries that occur in sports across the board, both for men and for women?
Yes. And for men, the order may be different. For women, you know, the order is definitely different. ACL tears is one of the most frequent injuries that young women and amateur, collegiate, professional women experience. Literally, just one of my longtime athletes plays lacrosse at Yale. She's trained with me and, you know, a multitude of other people over the years. She just tore her ACL in a one-on-one drill in lacrosse that she's been doing all summer long with elite athletes that are also playing Division I college women's lacrosse. And she was at practice this fall, literally 2, 3, 4 days ago, whatever it was. Did the move, did her dodge, defender checked her, she fell back and tore ACL and her meniscus. So yeah, injuries are bound. And even if you prepare, there's always that one instance, you know, that and that one angle and that one position and that one whatever where, you know, where you didn't address that particular area. And it is weak because what? Water will seek its own level. Pain and force will go to the weakest point, right? So if there's a, you know, we talk about big muscles and little muscles. Your big muscles are there to do the most work and shoulder the biggest load. Your little muscles are the connective tissues that support the big muscles. So if the connective muscles and the connective ligaments and all of that genre of tissue in the body is not strong enough, not mobile enough, not flexible enough, not stable enough, whatever it is to do its job, that puts more stress on the big muscles. And so when you have more stress on the big muscles, then that's when you have injuries.
You know, it's really unfortunate about the student that you trained as playing lacrosse at Yale. So if one of those students comes to you and they receive one of these injuries, what is the process that you and your staff do to helping them get back healthy and back on the field?
So there's three parts to returning to the field of play. One, there's the actual surgical, medical, orthopedic doctor who does the surgical repair. And he or she has to clear the athlete for rehab, right? Once you get cleared for rehab, then you're with a physical therapist or some type of clinician that specializes in getting you back to a point of full range of mobility, you know, reduce swelling, strengthening, proprioception, so on and so forth, that medical genre. And then there's the performance side to get you back to a level to actually perform on the field. So what we do in our shop, we don't have an orthopedic. We have a physical therapist in the facility who is outstanding, holistic in approach. And, you know, when he works with athletes and getting them back to a point where then they can then come with me, I know without a shadow of a doubt, you know, 100% confident in what he's done to get them to that point. So he's the bridge between the doctor who's done the surgery and me in the performance training. And so he and I work in tandem such that depending on the severity of the injury and the, you know, gender of the athlete, the age, all of those factors, we will program a regimen that is commensurate and supports what he's doing on the table, what I'm doing on the field or in the weight room, and then what the athlete needs, you know, in order to get back as quickly as possible.
Obviously, men and women athletes are built differently. One of the things that I read was through the Journal of Athletic Training. And what they reported was the stats on sports injuries that's showing that female athletes have a higher rate of overuse injuries, while male athletes have a higher rate of acute injuries. So based off that type of information, share with us how female athletes, you know, should train differently than male athletes to prevent injuries from happening.
Female and women athletes should just train, period. You know, so many times, you know, like my daughter plays soccer, you know, usually in America, if a girl plays volleyball, she plays volleyball. If a girl plays lacrosse, she plays lacrosse, particularly in today's environment. Back when you and I were growing up, you know, you played in New Jersey, where I grew up for the most part, you played soccer in the fall, basketball in the winter, and then you played lacrosse in the spring, or you played field hockey versus soccer, whatever it was. You cross-trained sports, and not one girl in high school that I knew in 1992 to 1996 lifted weights. They did not train at all. Now, in today's world, particularly in this Northern Virginia area, girls are playing soccer year-round. They're playing lacrosse year-round. They're playing basketball year-round. They're playing volleyball year-round. And so when you continue to use the same muscles and mimic the same movement patterns, that doesn't allow for the development of the connective tissue and the muscles that I talked about, the little muscles, the big muscles. Are everything's doing exactly the same. And that's when the overuse injuries come, when you've repeatedly done the same movement with no type of, you know, break or adjustment. And then you have the acute injuries where usually there is some type of impact that causes a boy's or a male athlete's injury. He gets hit. He falls on somebody, hits him. He hits somebody. He falls, you know, whatever it is. But those are the two differences, because most of the time a boys will train, strength train particularly, as well as speed train, more so than young women and women athletes do. And then number two, they're playing multiple sports. You know, most boys don't play just one sport. They at least play two. And so that's the difference that I think that that we see.
It's funny because I can remember when we were growing up, you know, the only training that we did was just lift weights, man. It was just about how strong you can get. And it was just about being powerful. And you know, the goal at that time when you were in high school was to put up at least 225 and more. And when you were squatting, your goal was to always get up to between 300 to 400 pounds or more, you know. One of the things that I see differently today as it relates to amateur athletes, or I can just speak from the high school's perspective, I'm sure it's different on the college perspective, that, you know, they do a lot of HIIT training. They do a lot of calisthenics. They do a lot of plyometrics. And those are the things that we just didn't do. It was all about power training, you know, trying to get strong, you know. And I see females that's doing those types of things also. Now, some of them are not maybe lifting the type of, you know, heavy type of weights, but they certainly are doing a lot of the HIIT, H-I-T-T, HIIT training and plyometric type of training as well.
Yep. And so it's that genre of plyos and core and, you know, body weight, all functional. That is what we call the functional umbrella. And, you know, you just articulated, particularly for basketball, and not even really basketball, really football was the main sport back in, you know, you growing up in North Carolina, where football was a, if not one of the most popular sport. And you may have had a high school strength class that, you know, was kind of mandatory or mandatory weight training or whatever it was. Powerlifting, you know, three movements, right? You got your bench, you got your squat, and you got your deadlift are the three movements that power lifters do. And it was all about being strong and big. Nobody talked about mobility. Nobody talked about flexibility. Nobody talked about stability. It was all big, strong, big, strong, big, strong. The bigger you were, the stronger you were. Nobody was even really talking about speed, because speed was something that, you know, either you had it or you didn't. But speed can be taught. Speed can be improved, in my opinion. And, you know, and so, yeah, just totally two different eras. And so then you look at where today's coaches are in the high school level. Most of them came, you know, most of these high school coaches are older than, you know, both of us. And they are in that mindset of, we're going to do bench, squat, and clean, which is even worse than bench, squat, deadlift. And there's other, you know, reasons and or pieces and elements to, you know, why that regimen of training, that powerlifting regimen of training, is so antiquated and not as beneficial for the athlete as, you know, it was once thought to be.
Right, right. You know, and it's funny too, because I can remember, you know, basketball coaches, man, forbade us from even lifting weights, because they always say, is throw your shot off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we didn't even do any type of weight training when we played basketball. Right. And there was, we didn't even do any weight training when we played baseball either. And I can never really remember soccer players, you know, in the weight room too much. I mean, I can remember, you know, when I did wrestle for a small stint, but all of that was really body type of weight, type of training.
Calisthenic type stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and the same thing for the female athletes. They didn't do nearly as much as they do now. I shared some pretty fascinating statistics earlier. So what I want to do is I want to highlight a few of them again that really stuck out to me. The College of Athlete Statistics reports that 63.8% of college athletes' injuries happen during competition and not practice. That soccer causes the highest number of injuries in women's sports, and around 21.9% of injuries require over 7 days off. When athletes perform, as coaches, you want them to play hard. And as fans, obviously, we want to see them playing hard as well. But with these types of stats that I just read, some athletes, you know, sometimes tend to play timid, you know, so they can prevent injury, especially if they are coming off a pre-existing injury. So when you think about it, you know, football plays week to week, you know, while other sports have shorter spans of rest between their games.
Mm-hmm.
What should an athlete do between games in order to help them get better when they're coming off an injury? Like, discuss, like, what would be a routine? So think about the routine that you guys have, maybe even from a professional level. But what do you recommend from the amateur sports perspective in between weeks? So right now, you know, fall sports has just started. So what should be the routine in order to help an athlete get better between games?
At Perfect Performance, we have what we call our athlete pyramid. And our athlete pyramid has a base of sleep, nutrition, and psychology. And so the sleep and the psychology are the most important pieces, because if you don't have good rest, the body can't recover, right?
Yeah,
rest is when the body recovers. And so I have seen where, as an active player, how my rest or lack thereof affected my performance the next day. So that's the first thing. Second thing is nutrition. What you put in your body is what you get out of your body. So if you're eating grease and, you know, simple sugar, and other, you know, bad types of food, you're going to perform the same way you eat, right? It's the same way if you have a Porsche and you put 87 in it versus 93 in it, it's going to perform differently. And then the last thing is the mentality, the mindset, right? If you've come off an injury, not dwelling on, oh, I'm coming off this injury, I need to take it easy, or I'm not 100% confident in cutting off this foot. Because when you're not mentally able to block out the memories of the injury, then you're thinking about injuring it again, and then you're overcompensating. So, you know, you had a right ankle injury, so now you're putting more, you know, work on your left ankle, which is then, you know, working muscles and joints and, you know, other parts of the body more on the left side than there's the right side. So then you create a muscle imbalance. And then once you create a muscle imbalance, there's all types of other issues that follow. So at the end of the day, being able to sleep well, eat well, and stay positive, you know, affirmations of I can, affirmations of I'm better, I'm strong, I'm fast, I'm whatever you need to tell yourself.
Right, right.
And so then you talk about strength, mobility, flexibility, and stability would be the next level, and having a regular regimen of those. So I would stretch, you know, in training camp, I would stretch sometimes 8 times a day with a stretch rope. I carried a stretch rope with me, particularly once I understood my body and learned and, you know, was educated. Man, I was staying with a stretch rope. First thing in the morning, I would stretch. Got to the facility, I would stretch. Pre-practice, I would stretch. Post-practice, I would stretch, right? Pre-practice, the next practice. Post-practice, the next practice, before I went to bed. So I'm constantly trying to keep my muscles loose and feeling fresh, because when you push the body and exert, the body gets stiff, right? And once you get stiff, lactic acid, so on and so forth. So I try to keep the body limber and feeling, you know, good as frequently as possible. So those 7 attributes are key for maintaining or having a solid regimen such that you can maintain your health.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting because, you know, most amateur athletes don't consider getting proper rest as well as eating properly as well. And I can remember when I was younger, my philosophy was eat what you want and just work out harder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's exactly what I did. So you're talking about eating, you know, fried chicken and French fries and burgers, you know, and I knew that was necessarily the most healthiest things. Or even on the flip side, I would tend to eat maybe a lot of fruit and salads, but it was high sugary types of fruits, and my salads would be just gouged with, you know, salad, salad dressing, you know, but I'm thinking I'm eating healthy. And I was like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna just work out harder. And I certainly didn't get the proper rest, but I've grown to understand that that's so important. And again, those are things that I'm starting to see a lot of athletes do is watch their nutrition and watch the amount of sleep that they get, as well as stretching. Those are all very important. One of the things I want to touch on is something that you just said was about the mental aspect, because when you get injured, that plays a big part in athletes' psyche. How do you get the athletes to prepare themselves mentally for the game and for the season, or to re-enter playing after coming off of an injury? Because a lot of times we tend to play a little bit more timid because we're focused on the injured leg or the injured arm or the injured ankle. And then I would think that, you know, an athlete who is not mentally prepared, that will also lead to injuries or re-injuries as well.
At the end of the day, it's about the relationship that you have with the player. And I try to connect with every athlete that I have engaged with, particularly on a one-on-one level. I'm trying to engage with them such that they trust me. They know that I'm there, you know, to support them and for them, and that I love them, and, you know, all of those things. And so an athlete shared with me that he said that even if you're wrong, meaning me, even if I don't really know what I'm talking about, I speak with such authority and conviction that they believe it. And so that is of utmost importance, in my opinion, that you instill confidence. After you gain trust, you instill confidence in the work that they've done with you and what the results have shown and what the actual return to the game can be. So it's really, for me, a function of trust. And then once there's trust, then we are instilling confidence and articulating, man, I see you working, man. This is so much better than where you started from, you know, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago. Man, I can't wait to see you play. You're looking strong. Wow, that looks good. You know, those type of affirmations. Everything's about affirmations. Every player, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Tom Brady. You got to have, if you have somebody that believes in you and instills confidence in you and instills confidence in the process that you just endured to get back from injury, then there's nothing that, you know, that athlete can't do, because they are trusting in the process and confident in themselves. That is our approach to get athletes back from injury.
Gotcha. Good deal. Good deal. So, you know, there are always 4 seasons that athletes must consider when looking at training programs. The 4 seasons: off season, preseason, the end season or the competitive season, as well as postseason. So what does training look like for athletes for each different season that will help keep their bodies in the optimal shape for the competitive season? So I'm sure there is a difference of training in the off season as well as the preseason. Discuss what that looks like.
And so by sport, you know, because now some sports are, there is no off season. There's just rolling into preseason. So for example, in baseball, you play in the, you know, let's say your competitive season is a spring. And now at the youth level, they're also in the summer. So either high school or youth, you're playing spring and then you're playing summer baseball. Then there's a short window, about a month, if that, or give or take 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks that you are not playing. And then you're rolling right into the fall season, even though you don't play tournaments. Like our baseball organization, we finish our last summer tournament is July 31st. And then our first fall tournament is in September 18th, 25th. Right. So that's what I mean by that. So then you're playing in the fall. And after you get done with the fall, then you're right into preparation for the spring. So it's really competitive season into another competitive season with a minimal break in between, into a preseason, into a competitive season. So, you know, versus football is competitive season, postseason, then off season, then preseason. So depending on the sport, number one. Number two, for those sports that have two competitive seasons in a year, you know, your baseballs, your lacrosses, your basketballs, you have to periodize in a way. When I say periodize, there's three training mediums, modalities, whatever you want to call them. They're three foundational, and there's some hybrids. But one, you want to train, you know, or you can train in hypertrophy, which means you are trying to create endurance, muscle endurance, and muscle size in the hypertrophy period. In your strength phase or period, you are trying to increase the load that the body is able to handle. In your power phase or period, you are looking to increase the ability of the muscle or the body to apply force. And then there's sometimes you're just trying to do some active recovery or active maintenance where you're biking, you're walking, you're swimming, you know, elliptical, whatever it is. And depending on the athlete, depending on injuries from the active season, depending on how much time in between each season, all of those factors determine what the actual training regimen looks like. But I will say this, regardless of what the season is, you don't want to beat the body up in a competitive season and then go right into beating the body up in a training season. So it's got to be a gradual. You can only gain from what you recover from. So if you're constantly beating the body up, then it's not going to ever recover. And then you're never going to see gains. So plenty of people, you know, they think the more I train, the better I am. The more. No, you got to train and then you got to let the training take effect. You got to rest. You got to recover, so on and so forth. So using those three phases of training, you know, and at the appropriate season that the athlete is in is what it looks like. So, you know, just to give you an example, a 4 set of 10 on any exercise, it would be hypertrophy. So you're doing high reps and some high sets or some medium, you know, medium sets. In a strength phase, you're doing 4 sets with 6 reps to 8 reps. So hypertrophy, 4 sets, 10 to 12 reps. Strength, 4 sets, 6 to 8 reps. Power, again, you're trying to load and then apply force. So you might be 6 sets, 5 sets of 1 or 2 reps. So that's kind of what it looks like. And great strength coaches are taking those phases and then adding, you know, yoga and other recovery types of exercises and mediums of training to accomplish, you know, the body being at its optimal state.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's important. That's definitely important. Good stuff. I mean, again, using myself as an example, I kind of just remember once one season ended, I quickly went into another sport. And the training was some similar and some of it was not. But, you know, it's definitely important, like you said, your body rests, not to overexert yourself because you don't want to re-injure yourself by continuously pushing your body to the max. So you're based out of Northern Virginia, which is right outside of the Washington, D.C. area. So, you know, people listen to this show, they're going to start thinking, well, I just can't get the perfect performance to receive the type of training that you and your staff offers. Are there any type of video trainings that you guys do? You know, one of the things that we saw during the COVID era was that people were getting creative and doing a lot of remote video type of training. I'm just curious to see if what are the techniques you can give? Do you offer that? And what are the techniques that you can give amateur athletes and their parents that are listening to the show today that they can do on their own that will help them to prevent injury?
Yes, we did. You know, in the pandemic, we had to revert to virtual training for all of our athletes, whether that was speed, you know, and body weight, you know, type strength training, just to and keep everybody engaged from a mental stability stand, you know, sanity standpoint. And then, you know, to continue to, you know, just keep our clients serviced because they had paid, you know, when the pandemic happened, you know, people had paid for the spring season. And we didn't want to just hold people's money and not do anything. All right. So that's one. Two, the things that you can do at home that are most important, and we haven't really touched on it tonight. I've said the word stability a lot, and stability means the core, right? From your armpit to your hip, anterior, front, posterior, back. And I distinctly remember when I was, a young athlete in the league, coach told me that I was two cinder blocks over a water balloon, meaning I was super strong up top in my chest and my shoulders and my back. And I was, you know, strong in my legs and my glutes and hammies, but my core was unstable and super weak. And so we addressed that. And once I addressed that, I felt way more control, way more confident, so on and so forth. And you can do core exercises at home all day, every day. Like, there's so many core exercises to do that don't require any type of equipment or minimal equipment. And so the more that you are able to recruit muscle fibers from your core, and the more that you're able to stabilize yourself, then the more power, the more control, the stronger all of that you will be. So the answer is yes, there's plenty of things that you can do at home if you don't have the equipment to improve performance. And, you know, for what we do, we are not a fitness base. Fitness is, you know, and I don't know the exact definition of fitness, but fitness is cardiovascular, keeping the heart rate up, you know, being well. We're looking for how quickly can I get to a ground ball that's loose? How quickly can I get away from that linebacker that's chasing me? You know, whatever it is. And so those are the things that, you know, a fitness, an in-home fitness program versus an in-home performance program, it varies. But as long as you have, if you got a strong core, then you can run faster. If you got a strong core, you can jump higher. If you got a strong core, you can apply more force, so on and so forth. So it is all, you know, it's all there.
You know, it's funny because as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, when my son was much younger and before he was even coming to you, one of the things that I would do with him after the season was over, I made him do P90X.
I remember that.
Because it was just a good overall workout. And I actually did it with him too, but it covered, you know, body training, strength training, core
and
training.
Mental toughness.
And it is a and mental toughness as well, boy. You know, shout out to P90X, man, and Tony Horton, boy. That was a phenomenal program. So listen, you know, how can our listeners get in contact with you or a member of your staff to schedule a session? I do believe that you guys are offering currently right now certain programs throughout the week that are helping amateur athletes become stronger. That's going to help train their bodies to minimize injury and to build strength so that their bodies can sustain through the long athletic season. Talk about that briefly, some of the things about how our listeners can get in contact with you and some of the things that you're currently doing right now at Perfect Performance.
Anybody who's interested in working with Perfect Performance, you can contact us on Instagram at PPNova_speedstrength. That is our performance training Instagram page. You can email us at info@perfect-performancenova.com. And obviously our website is www.perfect-performancenova.com. And any three of those mediums will get you and your athlete in contact with us. And then we'll respond. And we have a director of sales and marketing who responds to all emails and introduces what we call our first level of onboarding new athletes is our introductory offer. And it gets you a session of strength and or speed. If you're a high school athlete, if you're a middle school athlete or below, it gets you two speed and agility sessions. And most importantly, it gets you an evaluation. An evaluation is a functional movement screen. The functional movement screen is a set of exercises, movements, whatever, you know, we're asking you to do that test your mobility, your flexibility, and your stability. Because if we know where the holes are, we can articulate that to you and your parent, and then we can put a plan together to address those said weaknesses. We also give you a baseline of your movement and your power, right? So we take a baseline 40, take a baseline 5-10-5, which is a pro agility drill, which tells a coach or, you know, the player and the family how agile and how well the athlete changes direction. And then we do a vertical jump. And all of this is laser tested. So we are, you know, moving toward a sports science lab feel where we can really hone in on some of the technology that is in the marketplace, number one, for highly accurate data. And I can, you know, talk about that at length, but I won't. So that's the first thing, how to get in touch with us. And then the programs that we have right now, our fall program and our fall schedule is up. We have strength training every day at 7 p.m. in Tyson's. We have speed and agility training every day. Well, Monday through Thursday, I shouldn't say every day. Monday through Thursday for strength training at 7 p.m. Speed and agility training is 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday. And then we have a myriad of skills training that we can do. Most of our skills training is on hold right now because everybody's in a fall season. So there's fall lacrosse, there's fall football, obviously, and there's fall baseball, fall softball, right? Fall field hockey. And we're beginning to start construction on our new space that will be located in Tyson. So, you know, we're really pushing and preparing for our winter season, which a lot of the athletes that, you know, are in between their fall and the spring season, or, you know, in the case of football, will be preparing or heading into their first postseason period and then, you know, getting to the off season and so on and so forth. So that's what we have going right now.
Got it, man. And I can tell you, I've been to your facility, man. It's a massive, massive facility and it's extremely impressive. I wish they had something like that around when I was growing up. I would definitely be taking advantage of it. Really impressed.
Thank you so much.
Very impressive. Absolutely. So look, we're actually at the end of our show, but before we leave it all on the field, we like to have a little fun with our guests by asking them to participate in some quick hitters. And so what I'm going to do is I got about four or five questions. I'll ask you whatever comes off the top of the head is what your answer is going to be. So first question, if perfect performance was a definition, what would it say?
We are an elite sports institute focused on developing athletes for their next level.
Okay. Perfect performance, the word. Not necessarily your organization, but a perfect performance was a word. Just a definition. If you had to describe it, what is it? Not your organization, but perfect performance.
Pursuit of greatness.
What is a focus-driven athlete to you?
Focus-driven athlete is an athlete that has his or her goals clearly defined in their head, and they do not need to write them down because they are burning in their spirit, burning in their mind. And that's what they are, you know, thinking about on a daily basis. And they are in a relentless pursuit of achieving those goals. So they are focused on, you know, driving toward their goals.
Got it. Good, good. Would you rather A, be a star player on a top FCS team, or B, be a bench player on a top FBS team?
Definitely A. I don't know how, you know, if you're a competitor, dude, I'd rather be a starter at a Division III school, if that was where my abilities took me, than to just say that I had an opportunity to win a national championship at Alabama, you know, because I can be a manager and get a ring in Alabama. I don't want to be the guy, you know, wearing a helmet or not wearing a helmet, wearing a jersey, you know, whatever.
So
I'm always going to choose to play.
Absolutely, man. Same here. We're built for competition, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I don't know how you go someplace and sit the bench for, you know, 3 and 4 seasons.
But you'd be surprised, man. Some people just want that ring.
Yeah. They want that fame. They want that ring. They want that.
Yeah, they like that name recognition, man. This is, they play somewhere big.
Wow. Yep. Man, and it's not about that.
No, I agree.
For me, at least. For me. So, yeah.
Name your top 3 to 5 amateur athletes that you've worked with from any sport that you consider to be a focused, driven athlete. So this is your Mount Rushmore, but you can name any 3 to 5, man. Right now, we're going to give some shout outs to some of the athletes that you've worked with from any sport. You actually already given one from the young lady that plays lacrosse at Yale. So, but we don't know who she is.
Yeah. So, I mean, brother. So in the football is where we started. And Dwayne Haskins is, you know, one of our longtime clients. Trace McSorley is still a client, one of our long-term clients. You know, both of them had record-setting careers in college football and the Big Ten. Trace has, you know, he's at the top of the record books in many categories at Penn State. So definitely Trace in lacrosse. I would say I have a young woman who I've worked with since she was in eighth grade. Her name is Caroline Bean. You know, she's an attacker.
Shout out to Caroline. Good deal.
At Michigan, she's a one-time state champion at lacrosse at Langley High School. She's a 6A Gatorade 6A State Player of the Year.
Wow. Yeah.
Or the Virginia High School League State Player of the Year at 6A. So, you know, she's outstanding. The young woman who's at Yale is Jill Golub, another young woman that just, Emma Crooks finished at Virginia Tech.
That's 4. One more.
I would say MJ Stewart, who's a defensive back with the Cleveland Browns. You know, one of our long-term athletes, went to UNC, played early, got drafted in the second round. He was, besides Dwayne, who got drafted in the first round, he was our first draft pick. So MJ was our first NFL draft pick. Our very first one. Yeah.
Wow.
Very first one. So that's our Mount Rushmore right there.
Got it. Good deal. Good deal. Yeah. Shout out to all of them, man. Good deal. Last question. What topic would you like to see us discussed on Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete? And who would you recommend for us to interview that can speak to that topic? But before you answer, your job is to help bring this person on to the show.
Okay. I think that recruiting is a huge unknown among parents and athletes. There is definitely more than one way to skin a cat.
Yep.
But it ain't 100 different ways. It's a couple different ways, you know, 2, 3, 4. And so bringing someone on that can speak to, you know, the NCAA and
that's a good one.
The navigating the quiet period, the dead period, the open period for the non-revenue generating sports and, you know, the revenue generating sports.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that I would suggest is somebody who worked at the NCAA very, very close. And she has worked at Northwestern. I think she just left the NCAA. She was in compliance, I believe. And her name is Tiana Rich.
Okay.
So I will contact her.
Yes. Let's get her on. That's a great topic. We talk about that a lot in our social media pages as well. And with everything that's going on currently with the changes in the NCAA, we definitely would love to have her on as a subject matter expert.
She would be great. She was a director of operations at Northwestern's basketball program for some years as well.
Oh, awesome. Well, man, I appreciate it. Coach Leonard Stevens, man, CEO of Perfect Performance, on the first inaugural show of Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to our listeners today. It was an awesome show, man. And, you know, the best is still yet to come. Looking forward to doing a partnership with you guys. And, man, love to have you back on the show at some time to talk about a few more things if your time permits.
Absolutely, my brother. Anytime, you know, I love to talk about sports and amateur athletes all day, every day. So Again, thank you. Super honored to be here for the inaugural show and look forward to working with you again in this endeavor.
Absolutely, man. You feel like you left it all on the field today?
Left it all on the field, man.
Awesome, brother. Absolutely. Awesome. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, you know, there is the whistle, and that means it's time to get off the field. So thanks again for coming on the show. Looking forward to some big and brighter things, and much success to you and your guys and your team, and over there at Perfect Performance.
All right, appreciate it, brother. Likewise to you and the Field Goals team.
You've been listening to Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete. Stay connected with us by liking our Facebook page, Field Goals. You can also join the discussion on our Facebook group page, Field Goals for the Focused-Driven Athlete. Also follow us on Instagram at MyFieldGoals. And be sure to head over to our website at www.myfieldgoals.com to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of our show. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all other podcast hosting platforms. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to having you join us again soon on The Field.